Thank you for listening and subscribing to the Reconstructing Inclusion podcast. Also, if you haven't bought Reconstructing Inclusion, Making DEI Accessible, Actionable, and Sustainable, my book, please pick it up. We also have a Substack now under the name Reconstructing Inclusion. I'll be putting more content on that Substack before you know it. Hello, and welcome to the Reconstructing Inclusion podcast. My name is Omri Johnson, your host, and I'm here today with Raquel Ark. Raquel is many things, but what I've experienced from Raquel is that she is an expert on listening. And when you talk to Raquel, you absolutely want to be a better listener. Now, that lasted when we talked the last time, Raquel, that lasted for me for maybe like 2 days. And so it tells me that I either need to talk to you more frequently or I need to go deeper into really understanding this topic of listening. So I'm excited to get you started today. Again, welcome.
Thank you. It is really a pleasure to be here with you.
Fantastic. So Raquel, let's jump in. What I do with everyone when we get started is I ask a couple questions. And the first question is a favorite song or movie that you go to over and over again.
So there's a movie called The Princess Bride. I don't even know. It was from the 80s. It's really cheesy. And it's funny. It's a love story, you know, during the medieval times. And it has really kind of stupid jokes. And it's like the movie I go to if I just want to feel good. So often I'll watch that movie like once a year just to feel good after that. Usually it sticks with me for a little while longer.
Fantastic. And then the other question, Raquel, is a book or a person that's influenced or inspired you personally or professionally in your life or in your career journey?
You know, I've been really lucky. I've had so many people who've influenced me over the years. You know, I call them, you know, these angels that kind of come into your life. Sometimes it's for shorter periods of time, sometimes for longer. But in terms of the topic that we're going to talk about today with listening, I have one person who has had a huge influence on me and why we'll even have the conversation in the way that we have the conversation today. And that's Dr. Avi Kluger. And he is a scientist, a listening researcher. And he was based in Israel. And he is doing amazing work of understanding listening and has impacted a lot of us. And he was the person who helped take me to the next level. And he's always challenging me to always go to the next level. I guess we do that with each other, don't we?
Sure, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And these days we need to sharpen our listening in ways that we never even imagined the extent that we need to. So I'm going to jump right in. Tell us a little bit about yourself, your background. I want people to know who you are in parallel with your work and what you create. You seek to create in the world.
So I currently work in Germany, but I was actually born in Puerto Rico. So I'm a Puerto Rican American. My parents were divorced when I was around 9, so I lived between Puerto Rico and Ohio. And I just say that because I grew up between two cultures. Hmm. And the culture in Ohio, which was a little bit more conservative, you know, very white. And then Puerto Rico, where there's a mix of everything and Latins and touchy-feely kind of emotional culture. I grew up it was normal for me that there was just different ways of looking at things. And I didn't even think about it. I didn't analyze it like we would nowadays. It just was. And So anyway, fast forward, now I live in Germany, which is also a very different culture. And so in terms of how I am, I think that's why I really come through and really a lot of times question things and want to know, understand different perspectives. And I don't worry so much about right or wrong or good or bad, but you know, everything is information and how do we navigate through that? That's probably where this listening piece comes into play. If you fast forward, my background is in interpersonal and organizational communication. That's what I studied at Ohio University. And I always taught afterwards in different areas of communication. But once I moved here to Germany, I didn't know the language and I had to learn German. And then the job I found was in the chemical industry and corporate communications and public relations and external. It wasn't really what I studied. but it was the job that I got. And it was a great, I learned a lot about scaling communications and the impact of what is what we put into press releases or what we put into external communication and how that integrates into the company, how people start speaking that language after a period of time. So that was really interesting to me, or how to listen to employees. But then there was a point in time, this is before remote work, and I had a great team, I had a great job, but I was working a lot and I wasn't home much. And I had a six-year-old and I decided I wanted to have more time with him, and to be able to work less than 100% and to work from home besides one day a week was not possible. Mm-hmm. So I quit and I started my job. I sometimes wonder, would I have made a different decision nowadays? I might have made a different decision nowadays, mm-hmm. but at the time that wasn't even possible. And that's when I started working with communication and leadership coaching, even though the genre to now of spending that is based on listening was not what I had planned. And I recognized the power of listening. I used it when I was facilitating teams and groups, working on different topics. I saw the magic. They felt the magic. I did not talk about listening being the reason why the magic was there. And once we started having more challenging political time periods in our world, so this was like in 2016, I recognized that the reason why people were making decisions was not based on what they listened to, but based on not feeling heard. And yet I knew this was possible. And that was the point where I thought, okay, we need to start raising the voice or making listening more visible, because it is possible to be heard. But when it happens, we don't realize that we're on to the next, and more attention is given to being loud and the verbalizing piece. And that's when I started playing around with listening. And that's a whole other story past where I am to now. So that's a little bit about my background here.
Fantastic. Thank you, Raquel. You know, I think what the in-between, or where you are now, to talk a little bit about listening alchemy and some of the other work that you've done, I think it would be helpful for people to get a little bit of that foundation, because it's what struck me, and the reason why I wanted to have you on the show was I was going through one of your posts and then I listened to your podcast, and I really had this thought that, you know, I'm a really good listener. I really felt that. I was like, you know, I've been in this DEI stuff for a while, and I listen to people a lot, and I open up to them, and I'm really present. And then I was like, yeah, occasionally I'm really there, but then I come home and I'm not listening the same way to my kids or to my wife as I think I do outside of the home. And so am I really listening any, you know, more remarkably, or is that just my delusion because I haven't deepened it? And I don't beat myself up about it, but what struck me is that the level of presence that you show when you're really engaged, even on the screen, it's almost like you're sharing, and you're sharing into what is around you when you're talking. And so the listening is not just while you're stopped and you're quiet. It always almost seemed like you were listening simultaneously while you were talking. So you weren't just kind of in your head trying to get your message out. Mm-hmm. You were almost sensing the unspoken as much as you were the spoken. And I felt that again when we first talked. So how did you get there? Because that is a really profound space to be in.
And I'm not always there. I just want you to know I'm not always there. I think that's a good question. Thank you for that reflection. How did I get there? What's coming to me right now as you say that, and I've spent a little time writing. Writing about this listening alchemy to see if I can get some things out. And I actually have I work a lot in tech. So I have these people in mind, my tech clients in mind when I'm writing it. But when I reached out to some of my clients to find out, you know, if I write a book, what would you want to hear, or what would you like? And I asked specifically, I'll think of two people. One person is a people person. One person says they're not a people person, but they recognize the value of people and the importance of people in change projects. They both had a couple of things, but in the end, they're like, this presence piece is the piece that has impacted me the most, being present. Mm-hmm. And being from that space of presence, being able to critically think through to come up with my own solution. So I want something where you're not giving me the answers, but I want something where you help me think through it. But this presence piece has made a really big difference. So going back to your question, I think over the years and now, what we're learning from this listening science, which we're still learning, we're just understanding the power of this. But this listening that has a huge impact is one where we are fully present. And not only for me listening to you, but also listening to that I'm able to slow the pace down to the pace of presence so I can even listen to myself mm-hmm. while I'm speaking. Often we talk and we don't know what we just said. Listen to the pace of presence or slow down to the pace of presence so that we're able to take in what's happening with you, what's happening with me, what's happening in this moment, in this situation. And that doesn't mean that we don't connect it to the future mm-hmm. or the next steps. But in this space, we can make a more conscious decision and not one based on just trying to get the outcome done or based on fear or I have to go into the next meeting or I'm tired.
Slow down to the pace of presence. I think mm-hmm. I need to write that on my whiteboard because the world seems to demand that we move really, really fast. Mm-hmm. And sometimes even when you're with clients, I was with a client the other day and I knew that this was actually Tuesday and I knew I was going to talk to you on Friday. And I remember being in this room with her and she really wanted to drive this. And I listened and I paused long enough to hear what she was saying. And then she got through and she was like, well, what do we need to do? How do we need to get this done? How do we need to have this outcome? How do we need mm-hmm. to know that we can guarantee that we have outcomes? She was about to leave for holiday and she's been a fantastic partner and colleague and client in this journey. But I could sense that there was something there. And I stayed quiet and I said, is everything good? I just asked that simple question. She said, you know what? I'm hungry and I'm probably going too fast and, you know, everything's going to work out. I didn't respond, yeah. really. I actually did. I said more than I should have. I go back. I said more than I should have. And then I caught myself and I was like, oh, I think everything's going to be great. And are you good? And that's when we actually had the exchange that I think actually led into the meeting that we were going to have later that made it work. And that's what was so, it was powerful. So it leads me to say that ability to slow down and even to hear yourself, even to catch yourself, actually really resonates with me. And you said something before, you talked about listening as an art and a science. Mm-hmm. I don't think anyone would question how important listening is, but we don't necessarily invest time in learning how to do it better to understand this science and art. Why do you think people are limited, that they don't actually spend the time and invest in learning how to listen mm-hmm. more effectively?
There's probably multiple reasons. One is that there's a lot more attention given to training speaking and verbal skills. I think we assume that listening just happens. Mm. But it's also hard to measure listening, to know if someone's really listening or not. Probably that's why it's easier to measure people's speech and what they say. There's maybe if we could measure it, would have been able to measure it better earlier on, it would have been considered a little bit more. But there's more value given to the spoken language, not in all cultures, but mm-hmm. in especially the Western cultures, I would say. So probably that's the case. We assume that it's easy. And if you think about what you learned in school, you know, it's like make eye contact, lean forward, whatever. But to be honest, I wonder if that hasn't trained us to do fake listening.
Mm. Wow.
And
Because I think, yeah, of course, that's what you do. You lean in, you actually ask, you step, you sometimes you even lean back and let people know that you're really taking it all in, or all these other tricks and tips.
That you might be somewhere else.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah. So I wonder if that's part of it. But anyway, so we don't have enough in our school system. We understand listening a lot more. So now is the time to start getting listening into to programs earlier on. And I think not active listening, not like this kind of thing, but understanding what this real listening is. And part of that is really being present and using all your senses. And it has a lot of different, a lot more layers than what we have recognized so far. So it's fairly new, and there's a lot of development phases. We're just understanding the development phases of listening, but also in business training and universities. We don't have really listening classes. I had a listening class that where we had to, they put recordings on, and we'd have to just, you know, see if we memorized it, if we took in content. But in the business world, also in DEI, the content, the facts are not the reason why we have discussions. If we only stay at that level, we won't get anywhere, unfortunately. So often, learning how to listen, I like to say, learning how to listen with your whole body, it's multi-sensory and it's multi-leveled. This meaning that when we're with someone, even right now, we're just not listening with our ears. We might be listening with our eyes. We might be listening with our heart. We're listening with our gut. We're, you know, if we're in person, there's probably smells influencing how we listen, you know, subconsciously. So there's a lot happening. And the layers, notice how you listen, you know, and to be honest, as I say this, I'm also changing. So I struggle with thinking about there's a certain way of listening. Sometimes I wonder if in each situation we need to listen and to be more intentional with your listening. If I need certain facts to get my job done, then I'm listening for that.
Sure.
If I need to build a relationship with that person, build trust, then I'll listen in a different way. If there are some things I don't understand, like I had for the first time in years, I had an email from a client that was a reactive email, very strong. I'm like, whoa, where did that come from? Where they perceived me they lost trust because I didn't communicate with them, that I didn't have an answer yet.
Mm-hmm.
But it was and I thought, oh, that's really, I was surprised and a little bit sad. But then I slept on it, and then I responded and said, hey, what if this is an opportunity to build trust? Not that it's with trust or no trust, but it's an opportunity to build trust. Then we understand each other better and what the needs and interests are. And I'd like to invite, if you're open, to see what happens with that. And then the next email was about whether they would have to pay for it. So then I realized the reaction, that email was actually a fight ready not to pay for something because they had already used a budget and they were afraid of what would happen.
Wow.
With their boss. It wasn't me. It wasn't the trust. Maybe. But it doesn't matter. I still will follow through because there's so many layers there. There's the emotional layer. There was the practical layer. There is the different layer. And so how do we approach that situation and understand that the person even in front of you may not recognize the different layers that they're working at or how they reacted in the way that they did?
Yeah, as you were telling that story, and thank you for that, I felt this kind of fight or flight. Instantaneously, it came to me like, okay, what's this person trying to do? I need to really get clear. I don't want this client to feel bad. I don't want to lose this client. Like I could, you know, as an external consultant, all those things are going through my mind.
Mm-hmm.
Did that, you know, it sounded like you paused for a minute just as you were taking that in. And then I want to couple that with, you talked about context, and I, in the DEI space, I talk about this all the time. Context is bigger than content. And the deeper you go, oftentimes you probably heard content is the king and the context is the kingdom or queendom, however one wants to frame it. And I firmly adhere to that because there's almost always more there.
Yep.
So when that occurred, you're talking about whole body, talking about context, what all went through your mind as someone who's spent a lot of time listening, sometimes without even, you just listen to an email, right?
Exactly.
In a way.
We listen a lot to text nowadays. So obviously when we listen, when we get an email or we get something on Slack, we're not reading it as black and white letters. We're envisioning the person reacting or emotionally. We're making up this story of how this person is, and we're reacting to that. So my first reaction, I was surprised. I'm like, what? And that I was like surprised at the conclusion that came. I'm like, well, where was the confusion? What did I do? So I looked back at my communication, like, well, I was a little confused about what the perception was. And I realized that actually I left a few words out in what I was saying, assuming that he understood. So I just probably had to add a few other words to explain that if something changes, I'll let you know. Otherwise, we'll continue forward, you know, kind of thing. And so I missed a few words there. But also knowing that this person has a history of reacting, that was one of the reasons why they wanted to work with me. And we're not even getting started yet, and it's already happening, which was I thought was really interesting. And then I thought, okay, how can I approach this and role model a healthier way to approach this situation? This was my next thought. And even if the person doesn't want to work with me, it's okay. I don't need to work with this person. But my reputation in the company that I work for, this is important to me.
Right.
I want to make sure that I maintain that after all these years, that one person would mess with that. I don't want that to happen. And I don't think it would. But I want to make sure that at least we end on a healthy note, not only as a role model, but also as one of my bigger customers, if you look at the overall picture. And so if you ask me my process, I decided I'm going to sleep on it. And when I responded, though, I had to make clear that I did that intentionally. And I actually wrote, I was surprised by your email, and I decided to sleep on it so I could respond in a thoughtful way. So I described with this person, I need to describe my process. Or they may make the assumption I did not care because I waited to the next day.
Sure.
So if you ask me my process, that's what I did. And so I did that and I felt good no matter what happened. And then afterwards, the email came out about the money. And then for me, the context got clear. I'm like, okay, now I understand.
Sure. It just like that transparency probably reestablished the trust.
Because we're having a conversation.
Yeah.
Today.
If I was hearing that, I'd be like, oh, she does care about me, or she does hear me. She does feel me. However people want to frame that dynamic is they felt and they felt heard and seen in the way that you responded. I think in the DEI space, we always talking about feeling seen and heard. And a lot of people talk about, like, I feel like they feel me. And it seems like listening kind of rolls through all that. If I listen to your example, you know, all that was happening simultaneously in the context of an email going back and forth. I didn't even enter into our conversation today thinking about email as a listening space. And to me, that in and of itself tells us how fundamental listening is.
Yeah.
I'm going to pivot a little bit because you talked about clients. You mentioned, and when I was learning about your work, and some of it mentioned what you actually mentioned, listening playgrounds. So I like playgrounds. I have a 4-year-old. I go to playgrounds a lot. This was an intriguing concept for me. Can you share more about these? What is that? What do they look like?
So many years ago, when I first started, I did a lot of listening labs. I still do labs. And this is a little bit like this listening alchemy where you're experimenting with the different ways of listening while you're building the skill, but there's no expectations of outcome. It's an experimental thing, even though often a lot happens when there's no expectations of outcome. When I did the TED Talk, you know, that was by chance. A friend of mine told me I should try that out, and I got in. It was during pandemic time period. So it was an interesting time anyway. And that was the first time I wasn't used to talking about my own stories, actually. So the first version I put together had nothing to do with me. And I had someone tell me, hey, that's a training program. That's not a TED Talk. You better change it. You got to tell your story. So anyway, so this was a part of my practice of getting used to also being seen and sharing my stories. As I was thinking about my journey, and that's only one part of my journey. As I was thinking about the journey and how, when I first started, I thought I was a really good listener. I know I am a pretty good listener. I've been a good listener for a long time, good listener. And I wanted to help others to listen better. And what I realized is that through, you asked about my mentor with Avi, meeting him, understanding the research, but he didn't explain the research to me. He took me through experiential exercises that were playful. And that's how I learned. And I realized, oh my gosh, I have so much work, more that I can learn and I can grow. And the more I learn about listening, the more I know how much I don't know. Mm-hmm. And it was through this experiential playfulness that hit home. So fast forward, when I realized that, I thought, okay, let's try some listening playgrounds. And this was a challenge to myself to see, is it possible within 45 minutes to create a playful experience where I am not explaining listening, I'm not talking about it, but we're doing something that will help experience it in playful and playful ways that are unexpected. It's like you go to the playground and you just happen to meet with someone and you go down the slide the normal way, but maybe then you try to climb up the opposite way. And then you go twirl around and get dizzy and stumble to the rock climbing thing. I don't know what, you know? So it's a little bit with that in mind, that it can it be done in a short period of time where you bring a bunch of people together, put some exercises out there and see if they can develop their listening skills without explaining it to them in playful ways. And so I've done quite a few of those and they're very experiential as prototypes over this last year.
Fantastic. I hope you do more of them, because I think my listeners, and I know personally, I want to be in a listening playground. So just know that when you're ready to open up the next playground experience, that you have people in line. So you talked about your TED Talk, and a quote that I took from it, Raquel, was you said, "I believe that if we partner science with experiential learning and then regular practice over time, that this will create a safe space for listening to transform this communication into connection." So you just talked about experiential learning. How do you partner science with experiential learning in your work?
Often when we have these magical listening moments, these moments that really help us get clear, feel better, have a new idea, you know, build trust, build a relationship. When we have these moments, they feel good, but sometimes it's really hard for us to put words to what just happened. We know something just happened, but to put words to it is really hard. And so where science is helping, it has helped me to be able to explain the impact of listening in a way that people can understand. For example, when you listen well with someone, no judgment, really trying to understand their perspectives, the speaker will actually start to speak better. They will be clearer. They will be more engaged. They will be more interesting to listen to. What the research is showing is that the quality of the listener impacts the quality of the speaker, as one example.
Wow.
Once
Wait, I'm going to interrupt you for a second. So this is a construct or concept that I've firmly believed in for a long time, that the way that we engage with each other is not individual. So you're basically saying, in any kind of communication back and forth, that there's an interdependence on how we listen, even in a team or in a room. Everybody listening to who's speaking can elevate the nature of that dialogue by being better listeners?
Yes. Yes.
Wow. Continue, please.
Continue. Yeah. So what does that mean on a practical level? That means right. If you're giving a presentation or you're going to a meeting, talk to some of your people ahead of time to say, hey, listen to me well, be engaged. So then that will help you speak better. Hmm. Or you have an image of the person who would. You focus on the friendly faces, not the ones who are distracted, for example. Or if you go in and your boss is distracted, then say, hey, is now a good time? You seem like you're distracted. Do you need a few minutes to finish something up? Often they don't realize and they're like, oh yeah, okay, no, let me finish this email. Oh no, I'm here for you. And then they will be there and the chances of you speaking better is higher. So those are just some examples. But your responsibility also in being engaged. That's one thing. Another example is that we're learning that listening is episodic, which means that they're in moments. We can only listen really well, this really, like really fully present, only for a period of time. At some point in time, someone will break it off, a joke, your mind will wander, something will happen. Because in these more, let's say, present moment speaking situations, we're changing each other. We don't know this for sure, but Avi Kluger thinks that our systems can only change so much at once. And that's why we naturally will break things off. So when you think about listening, think more in terms of moments and when you will do it well. And it could be at some point in time your mind wanders. So when you notice that, you bring it back.
Wow.
Or if you notice someone gets distracted, do something to bring it back.
Wow.
Because it will only happen in moments. Also in meetings and what we're doing, sometimes like you think about how meetings are structured, they don't give time for these, for us to take a pause to let things set in so we can come back again and be present again. Or you have a group and before everyone gives an answer, you have them write one sentence down in silence before you actually say something out loud. Like these are ways to think in terms of moments and taking people through these moments so that there can be, so the listening can be better, not only you and with the other person, but facilitating listening within a group.
Sure. You know, you said something, and Dr., is it Kluger?
That's Avi Kluger.
Mm-hmm. So Dr. Kluger talking about this, that listening creates the conditions for the space to change each other. And one of the ways that I've thought about inclusion is it's a willingness to be influenced by the so-called other, meaning that this otherness that we oftentimes create when somebody has some difference, sometimes mostly the differences that we can see, kind of sits as, can I be influenced by them? And what you're saying is that when we can truly listen, it almost naturally occurs that yep. we're influencing each other almost organically because we've set ourselves in the space of listening.
Right.
How do we practice that and get better at it? Because you talked about practice over time. Mm-hmm. There has to be both the environment mm-hmm. and the ability to practice. How do you combine that? Because that's really powerful to me that we're changing each other without even having to try, you know?
Well, that's one thing. Sometimes you do one-off workshops or whatever, but that's just by listening, even experiential workshops where it does impact you. What I see missing in the training and development and learning and development and communication is how, you know, to give experiences to practice over time in different ways with each other. I'm using case studies or real life situations. In my ideal world, I would love to have that a little bit more. Every so often I get to work with groups over time. And it's amazing what happens in those situations. So how do we practice? You can do it on your own and just plan, schedule time where you're only choosing to listen, going to a meeting or having a one-on-one or doing things where you're only going to listen. And listening doesn't, there's a couple different ways. It could be that you're not saying much, you're responding, you're very present. You might ask a few questions. You're giving some nonverbal cues that you're present. That's one way. This will have a huge impact. The perception, you'll notice you'll build trust, they'll open up more. The person in front of you will become less extreme in their thoughts and ideas. They'll come more close to the middle. They're more likely to cooperate and collaborate, and they're more likely to want to listen to you. They'll be more satisfied with your relationship. So just that type of listening, it has a huge impact. Then there's the next listening, and this is what we're doing, is once you're able to be present and do that, but then you're maybe reflecting back what you understood is important to the person, or you're asking a question that helps further the thinking process. You might even challenge the person, but it's connected to what's being talked about, what's important, and it's with the good in mind of that person or the situation. This type of listening has huge and powerful business outcomes that they're finding out. But this takes practice. Mm. And I think one of the things is to practice listening in a way that it's not about you, but it's really your attention is on the other person and following that person or following the room and the situation. So if I'm in one of our meetings with, even at leadership level, with at board level and things, I'm paying attention to the whole. So I'm in, making sure people are included. I'm making sure the voices are heard. If it seems like it's the flow is not, is only back and forth, we'll pause, maybe listen to everyone's perspective first before moving on, or have people write what they think in the chat, depends on the size of the group, or we'll take a break and put people to small groups first before coming back. So that type of listening takes listening to another level, because it's not about your perspective, my perspective. What if all of us have a part of that perspective that come together and actually give us the whole perspective? And from there, there's another, you know, that's where the good stuff is.
Yeah.
We're often moving too fast on to the next thing and not taking a little bit of time just to dive deeper, slowing down that pace, and not only just slowing to the pace of presence. This is actually a quote that I have from some of my coaching, my transformational coaching places, but to with listening, the listening at the pace of presence.
Wow.
So listening at the pace of presence, then you know you're probably there. And it will only be for a moment, and then a next moment, and then a next moment.
Okay.
So back to practicing. One of the things I do think that if you can just like let people know, say, hey, let's practice listening. And then you say, hey, I'd love to listen to you, share your stuff. I'll ask, well, I'd like to follow you for the next 5 minutes. And then can you do the same for me, for example? Or if you're in a meeting and you have a peer where you want to help each other get better, to be better listeners, then you practice in the meeting, then afterwards reflect what just happened. How did you notice each other working? What did you perceive? What did I perceive? Oh, we perceive different things, that you start noticing that there's so much more there. Those are some ways of doing it.
No, that's
besides doing trainings and, you know, there's
You got to do it. It's like anything that we get good at, we have to put it into practice. What occurred to me is it doesn't mean that you have to take a lot of time. So I imagine you're talking sometimes to busy managers or executives and they're like, I don't have time to do all this listening stuff, right?
They have time to deal with the misunderstandings afterwards. They love that stuff.
it's like you have time to deal with the problem that not listening calls, but you can't deal with practicing how you can get better at it. So I want to talk a little bit before we move towards closing. Sometimes stakes are high, Raquel. And when stakes are high, intentions are there, and things are complex, listening seems like it's a luxury. We just need to get it done.
Oh, no.
Right? So
that's a myth.
What's listening's role in high stakes times and with lots of tension?
Let me ask you the opposite. What happens when there isn't any listening? Then what's the stake?
We can look around the world. We can look around relations. We can look around organizations. We probably can answer that.
Yeah. That would be my question.
Yeah.
You know, that's what I see. It's a perception. Really pay attention. Do the opposite of that question and then see how you answer. When you don't feel listened to, how do you react or respond to that person? When the information was not taken into consideration, you know, then what happens? So often we notice when people do not listen to us, but we don't pay attention. We're not listening to others. So assume that there are people that you are not listening to and things that you have not heard yet. Assume that you don't know everything. If you assume this humility, that will switch you to be a better listener. And there's some recent research coming out. I just did a podcast interview with a researcher on humility, and she talks about intellectual humility. So it's really the conscious choice of assuming you don't know everything when you're going into a situation.
Right.
And if you want to be seen and be visible, it's not just about speaking your opinion. You can notice that craziness conversation going on and then pull it together into a summary so you're helping the group to hear themselves. Or if you notice that people are aligned in some one area, but there's gaps in other areas, then you point it out. Often people are actually on the same track, but they're not listening to each other and they think they're in conflict, but they're not, just slight shifts. So if you can be the person also to summarize, to ask questions that help the group further, to facilitate things, you will be seen and you will be trusted. And at the same time, recognizing that listening people who don't listen have autocratic power. It's shown that their power, their autocratic power increases because if I'm not listening to you, I'm better than you, right? And this is how we're trained in school. This is probably a survival mode instinct thing. And this is true. So if you listen more, your autocratic power will go down. But if you are a listening leader, your prestige power will go up. This power is the one where people want to follow you. They are inspired by you. They trust you. They want to be with you. They want to follow you to the next step versus the one where you're forcing people. So why don't I just offer you a choice? You have a choice. What kind of power do you want to have?
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes in certain situations, you might need one or the other. So in a crisis situation, something's burning, you might need to have that autocratic power, and that's okay. So you may need to adapt. But over a long term, in terms of sustainable, where you don't want to burn people out, where you want people to have, if you want your employees to have better well-being and you want them to feel better and be more satisfied with the job, then the listening piece, and it doesn't mean you have to listen all the time. It can be just a few moments, but in that moment, you're doing it well. And right. When you do it well, it doesn't take that long.
Mm-hmm. It occurs to me that even if you need autocratic power, if you don't have some type of reserve or of prestige power, it doesn't even land the same way. If there's like low levels of trust, autocratic power actually could do you a disservice if you haven't built up any prestige where people actually feel like, okay, when this person says something and they're saying it because we must, there's a fire and we need to get out of the fire and I know this is the direction, go, right? Mm-hmm. Versus, I don't know about whether I should leave this fire under this person's leadership, right? So a couple things like came to me as we were talking, as you were sharing.
Yeah.
I think about that. You talked about all of our pieces kind of fit the whole. And I start thinking about that metaphor of several blind people touching the elephant and making their interpretation of the elephant. Different one feels the tail and it feels like this, and another is feeling the trunk and it feels like this, and one has an ear, et cetera, et cetera. It's the listening that actually allows that picture to be clear when people bring it together. Right. And that metaphor came to me as I was listening to you. So
one of the exercises that International Listening Association is an association that has a lot of experts from all over the place who are really wanting to advance the listening. So researchers and practitioners, educators, so really people who are just focused on listening. And believe it or not, we have a hard time listening too, just so that you know. And so right now I'm the president of that. And one of the things that was important to me and important to many of us is how can we actually do it as well as talk about it, right? Mm-hmm. And so we have really made the intention over the last year and a half to bring listening circles into the organization. And we practice this on a regular basis with each other. And so a listening circle is where you go in a certain order and you use the same order and a person doesn't have to speak, they can pass. And you speak from the heart, so you speak what's important to you.
Mm-hmm.
You listen from the heart. So when the other people are speaking, you are really open and noticing connections, willing to change. The third is that you don't rehearse, because as soon as you start rehearsing, you're not listening, you really actually shift your attention back to the person who's speaking. And the last is to speak lean. Say enough, but don't keep going on and on, because people cannot listen to you then. You'll lose their attention. Right. Less can be more. And not to just repeat what someone else said, you know, what brings the group further. Anyway, by doing this over time, people love it. And you can do it with questions, with making decisions. You can do it and you can adapt it in so many different ways. Introverts are more likely to speak out because they don't have to if they don't want to. But when they're ready, they do. Extroverts are people who talk a lot, are more likely to listen and take in more because they don't have to worry about when they'll get their when they have to talk and they know they'll be heard too, you know, so it really helps even things out.
Sure.
Yeah. And I've used this in all different, from senior levels to all different areas, and it's always very powerful. So this is something that I can imagine would be really supportive in the environment with this audience.
I love that concept. And it's something that I think with slight training, a lot of people could practice it on a regular basis, and it could become a part of your kind of group norm in a way. So
The structure helps create the conditions of listening.
Absolutely. Structure almost always creates behaviors. So Raquel, we're moving towards the end. Is there anything that I didn't ask you that would be important to this group? I think I could talk to you. I think I said this to you when I talked to you before. I can talk to you all day because I feel like there's listening and presence and all the things that you want when you're talking to somebody. And I might have missed something. Was there anything I missed?
Well, I'm just trying to, maybe one thing that might be important in this group, even though if there are people who have questions afterwards and they send you questions, then maybe we can see how we answer those questions.
And where can they find you just before you answer the question? Where could people find?
They can either find me on LinkedIn under Raquel Arc, or they can go to my website, which is listeningalchemy.com.
Fantastic.
And send me a message. Yeah. I was just thinking about these meetings that are all draining, so sucking up energy type of meetings. And if you're the one who's preparing the meeting or have some influence over the meeting, pay attention to how it's structured so that listening can happen. Either giving people a chance to know what the agenda is, and that if you want people's input, that you have the agenda in questions to get people to start thinking ahead of time versus statements where they expect to get information from you. Mm-hmm. Also, to separate getting information versus coming up with decisions or brainstorming ideas and solutions. Sometimes when that's all mixed together, there's people at different areas, and then it gets all confused and people are frustrated after. So sometimes it's better to have shorter meetings and separate those, so the brain, because different parts of the brain are being used for different areas. And that if you want input, it's much better to put people in twos to have them think through it before, instead of a big group. So if you can put people into twos or small groups to talk about things in a small group before bringing it to the big group, or where they put their answers in the shared document and then taking a moment to go around and reading that, people sharing their perspective, or using some of the anonymous platforms like in Mentimeter, they have these certain types of ways that you can get input, even anonymous. Those ways are very powerful. So pay attention. Am I creating this space in a way that people are able to listen to each other in the best way? The most powerful influence of listening is the person that you're listening to, the pair. So there will be some people you do it well with, some people you will not. The chances of increasing listening in the team or in your group is to put people in pairs first, or mix pairs up over time before bringing it to the big group. Or if you notice things not going anywhere in a big group, put people back into pairs. That's a huge influence. That has a huge influence.
Thank you, Raquel. And thank you for this time. Thank you for what you're creating in the universe around this really nuanced skill of listening. And I hope that those of you that are listening today can go back and continue to refine this skill, because it's one that, particularly in the world of diversity, equity, and inclusion, if we're not good at that, I don't know what we can do to actually make our organizations inclusive as we aspire to. No listening, in my opinion, there's no inclusion. So we want to get better at that, and Raquel and her work can lead you there. Thank you again. I really appreciate it.
It was really a pleasure to be here.
If you are committed or simply a little bit curious about how to make DEI accessible to everyone, actionable, that is, unambiguously prioritized and sustainable, aligned with personal and organizational purpose, hit the subscribe button. Make it a great day. Peace.